a good friend of mine, somebody I always love to turn to when it comes to the Democrats, and that is John Aravosis. He is with America Blog, also the host of the Unprecedented podcast, which you can listen to on all your favorite podcasting platforms. John, I said the big winner last night, and I know this isn't original, but the big winner last night to me was Donald Trump, because I'm just watching the Democratic Party self-immolate here.
You know, people have been saying that. I disagree, because I think at this point, look, Bernie Sanders is an existential threat to our party and to the left movement overall. And if he's our nominee, Trump is getting elected.
Yes.
And we're going to lose the House.
Yep.
So with that in mind, Bernie is the current juggernaut. You do not beat Bernie by talking about Donald Trump. You've got to knock Bernie out of the race in the same way that Warren, I think, did an amazing job going after Bloomberg last night. And it quite surprised me. I thought Bloomberg was going to be much stronger. I was kind of blown away.
Oh, really? I didn't. Right? I had no faith in Bloomberg. He's never been a good debater. He hasn't had a debate in a zillion years. All he's been doing is carpet bombing the airwaves with ads. I wasn't shocked last night. I predicted yesterday on the airwaves he was going to implode.
Well, you are a better political analyst than I.
Oh, stop it.
Because I absolutely... No, I really did. I thought he was going to come out and do his... You know, the way he does his press conferences, and he's very reasonable and smart businessman. I just thought that. In any case, he didn't do it. But here's my thing. I think you've got to knock some of the other people out, just like Klobuchar did last time. You know how Klobuchar was able to surge because she did well in the debate. Warren did well this time. She might surge. But the problem is Bernie's the guy to beat. And the only person really taking on Bernie was Pete Buttigieg and a little bit of Mike Bloomberg. The other ones were going after Bloomberg. And right now, Bloomberg is not the existential threat to A, the party and the movement, but B, to the nomination. It is Bernie Sanders. And I got news for Elizabeth Warren, too. People, she kind of seems like she's going after Bernie's audience. Well, guess what? Does Bernie's audience want Bernie or Bernie Light? They'd rather have Bernie.
They've already made up their mind. The progressive wing of the party has already made up its mind that it's Bernie. So as far as I'm concerned, Elizabeth Warren could have had the greatest performance of her life last night. She is Bernie Light. She's not getting the nomination. It's only a question of when she has to drop out of the race, not if.
Well, if she doesn't go after Bernie, now here's part of the problem, I think. A, the progressive wing is not for Bernie. I'm a progressive, and I'm not for Bernie. Bernie has done a really good job, and the media has bought into believing that if you're a progressive, now we're all neo-socialists or something. Well, no. A lot of us are still progressives who just don't think Bernie's a little too far out there, right? I think Warren made a huge mistake in that calculus as well, because, you know what? I like Buttigieg. I also like Biden. I like I love Kamala Harris, right? But I would absolutely vote for Warren, and I would love to vote for Warren. And if Warren could convince me that she was better than Buttigieg, I'd be there in a flash. And I was talking with Cliff about this on our podcast today. I think it's wrong of her to think that she can only go for Bernie's people. I think she appeals to a wide – she may not appeal to the middle. They may be afraid of her, right? But she appeals to a wide swath of the left. And I think she's writing us off wrongly by thinking she can only go after Bernie's people, and by doing it by being nice to Bernie, which is crazy.
And the reality is, John, Bernie's going to be there till there is no knocking Bernie off at this point. He's got so much money. He's going to get enough delegates. He's going all the way to Milwaukee regardless. So at this point,
Correct. It's
got to be about trying to get to Milwaukee, get this thing to a point where he doesn't have enough delegates to cross the threshold, and then having it go to a second ballot in Milwaukee.
Correct.
I mean, that's the only way that Bernie Sanders is not going to be the nominee at this point.
I agree, but the point, what I meant by knock him out, I meant kind of like what happened with Bloomberg. What happened with Bloomberg last night, you know, I honestly don't hate Bloomberg, but I was watching last night and I went, ooh, you know, it made me recoil, and I kind of like the guy in his own weird way. I know he's bad at a lot of stuff. I know that. I'm not saying I'm supporting him, okay? But even I kind of get that, and my dog is whining at me as I'm talking to you, so I'm like trying to... She diverted by I'm having a Biden moment, I think. What the hell were we talking about? Bloomberg? She literally started going, woo! I'm like, oh, our children.
Our fur babies. Yes, I know.
No, in any case, but I think I think Warren – oh, right, so it's not about knocking Sanders out of the race. It is about putting a dent in his armor, just like a dent was put in his armor in Bloomberg's, just like a dent was put in Biden's, frankly, just like a dent was put in Warren's over the last month. Like, all of a sudden, somehow she became unelectable, even though she was doing really well 3 weeks ago, right? You've got to do the same thing to Bernie, where all of a sudden it becomes, ooh, Bernie peaked too soon. Maybe Bernie's not – maybe Bernie's passed. We haven't delved into enough. Maybe he is too extreme, right? Maybe he's too angry, frankly, right?
Yeah.
You thought Klobuchar was angry? Bernie looked like he was the heat miser last night. His whole face was exploding.
John,
nobody jumps on him for his anger as much as they do on Klobuchar. And Klobuchar was kind of out there, but
Let's be honest too. Yeah. That's a bit of sexism, because if you're a woman, you can't possibly get angry.
Yeah, no, but she lost it last night, and she's got a history of throwing staplers at staff. I mean,
well, who amongst us hasn't?
Whereas Warren socked it to him last night, but she was not angry at all. She was brilliant, I thought. And, I mean, actually, I could even call it righteous anger or whatever word you want, but it's a positive with Warren.
John Aravosis
just looked like she lost it, I thought.
Talking with John Aravosis, America Blog, also the Unprecedented podcast, joining us here on Connecticut Today, WICC. So I've been a proponent of the idea that, especially since Kamala Harris dropped out of the race, because she was my original pick, that if Joe Biden doesn't win the nomination, we're getting four more years of Trump. Do you still see a path for Biden to win the nomination?
You know, I'd like to see what happens Super Tuesday first. I mean, let's face it. We're judging this by two stupid races in two small states. You know, I mean, we wrote Biden, we wrote Warren off because of two small states. It's a little early to write Biden off. I think if Sanders is not able to upturn the rules. By the way, you should remind your listeners, Bernie Sanders helped write the convention rules. His staff got together with Hillary's staff, and they worked out the rules that are governing our delegates this year. The fact that we have multiple rounds if you don't get a majority of delegates is because Bernie Sanders helped create those rules, right? So I think for every candidate, Biden included, they've got to think of basically keeping nobody from getting a majority, and then all the delegates are freed up, and then it's a free-for-all. And then we get to see who was the – you know, because honestly, I think there are more anti-Bernie than pro-Bernie votes. And if you get into an open convention, you might get Biden, you might get Bloomberg, you might get Warren, you might get Buttigieg.
I've only got a minute or so left. If we get to that open convention, and I hopefully will get to talk to you before then, but if we get to that open convention, is there somebody who's not in the race right now that could wind up in it?
I think it's a little late for that. I feel like it's a little late. I mean, who, Al Gore? I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's Hillary. It's a bit late for that. You know, unless everyone freaks out, but I think that's a bit – look, I'm happy to have the convention rules be as they are and say, you know what, Bernie doesn't get a majority. He doesn't get the nomination unless he wins the second round. But having somebody drop Deus Ex Machina out of the sky and take the convention out of nowhere
– Here's the thing, John.
A little over the top.
But here's the thing, John. You said unless, you know, everybody goes nuts. To me, when I look at polling – that shows Mike Bloomberg nationally getting what he was getting going into this debate last night. Now, I think that might drop off a little bit after what happened last night, but that remains to be seen. When I see that, it tells me people are already freaking out. That people, just based on an ad campaign by Mike Bloomberg with billions of dollars, were willing to flock to this guy without really knowing anything about him, to me shows the party is already freaking out.
Yeah, I think the party is, but honestly, there's not enough freak out, and that's what we saw in the debate. Everyone thought they had to go after Bloomberg, and nobody was worrying about Bernie Sanders. People are not freaking out. Our side, anybody who's not for Bernie, has been biting their lip for 5 years, and you know what? The chickens came home to roost. We all decided to play nice. Well, Bernie's people didn't play nice, and he's going to be our nominee. And then we're going to lose to Donald Trump, we're going to lose the House, and then we're going to have a real long discussion about whether socialism was the answer, just like Corbyn in England. How many policies do you think Corbyn's getting enacted right now that he lost the election? Zero.
Very
and we're going to have the same thing, and people are going to learn that, you know, sometimes you shoot for the moon and you miss the moon. You know, was it Apollo 11? I forget which one. You know, it's just, no, I'm serious. I think Bernie is selling people a really cute little song and a happy pony dance, your free college and everything else. It's not the way the world works. And this whole thing could come crashing down because they wanted us to take a risk on Bernie. because, frankly, they're all very privileged, I think, in that regard. The rest of us kind of get what's at stake. Bernie's people do not. It's Bernie's ego. I'm not a fan.
No, I listen, I'm not either. John Aravosis, catch him in the Unprecedented podcast, also with America Blog. John, I'm out of time. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Thanks, dude. Bye-bye.
Dom, UConn takes on Temple tonight in PA. Is there, I mean, minus a deep run, and even with a deep run in the AAC tournament, is UConn, I mean, could they make the tournament, or would they have to win the AAC tournament in order to get there?
I would say, Jason, and by the way, it's great to hear you back on the airwaves in Connecticut. I would say that if they were to win all their remaining games and get all the way to the final of the AAC tournament and lose, that would put them at about 22, I think. They might have a shot at an at-large bid, but I think an at-large bid is probably beyond their reach realistically, and it's more either win the conference tournament and get an NCAA bid or an NIT bid, which, for the way this program has been the last 3 years, that would be a step forward for sure.
Dan Hurley was really kind of – you could tell when coaches kind of – I mean, Dan Hurley can be an emotional guy anyway at times.
Yeah, sure,
but you could tell you could tell he was really emotional at the latest injury uh-huh. sort of that befell the Huskies. Talk a little bit about that and kind of your impressions and what you saw from him.
Well, you know, a cook is kind of a different kind of personality. There's kind of a youthfulness about him, an enthusiasm about him. There's a kind of a caring nature about him, a little bit like David Ortiz, which mm-hmm. went with the Red Sox, might make that comparison. And so when he went down, it really affected not only Dan, but the players. You know, Christian Vitale wouldn't even talk about it, and there's not much Christian Vitale doesn't want to talk about. So he had this special relationship with his coaches and his teammates, and it was they really, really were affected by the injury. And, they're going to be affected more now by missing him because he was an extremely important part of the things they were doing well.
Well,
and
Dom,
very difficult to replace.
And Dom, I mean, are we talking about with a torn Achilles? Are we talking about him missing most of next season too?
Possibly. He could possibly miss all of next season. But I think I think there's a scenario. I think if things go well, he could possibly be back in time for conference play next season, maybe a little bit earlier. I mean, we've seen some examples where, you know, guys are back from this and. In 7 or 8 months. I mean, because he's young and what he's got in front of him, I don't think there's going to be any effort to rush him. But no, he could certainly miss most of next season. He could miss all of next season. So this is not an injury that you come back from this, you can make a full recovery and be the player you were before. But it takes time because that's a part of your body that usually does not heal very quickly.
All right, we're talking about 7 or 8, you know, basically scholarship players for Dan Hurley to work with. Talking with Dom Amore from the Hartford Courant here, joining us on Connecticut Today. Huskies and Temple Owls tonight here on WICC. Pregame at 6, tip-off at 7. Who fills the breach with Akuka-Cook out of the lineup?
Well, I think, we saw against Memphis, he went with two big men. He put Isaiah Whaley in there with Carlton, and that gives a different look. They're a much bigger physical rebounding team. That matchup worked against Memphis. Tonight you may see more Brendan Adams in there, smaller, quicker team. Because the problem with playing Whalen and Carlton together is you could get both of them in foul trouble and then there's no one else. So it's going to be a little bit of a balancing act, a little bit of a high wire act. But essentially he's going to be mixing and matching between Whalen and Brendan Adams to fill that spot. They're really going to be playing without what you would consider a prototype four-man or stretch four. It's going to be more like either another three or another five.
As much as I like to talk about the Huskies and, you know, hey, it's been a couple of rough years and you start to think, hey, maybe they're putting things together, and I know the Akuka-Cook injury obviously sets that back mm-hmm. a ways. You look at a kid like James Bouknight and just how special he is, but the reality is, how difficult is it to translate what it means for the future of the Huskies when Bouknight probably won't be here next year?
oh, I don't know that Bookman won't be here next year. I mean, I don't think he's an NBA guy right now. He's an NBA guy sooner rather than later. But
You don't think he comes out after this season?
I think he tests the waters, but I think he comes back to school. That would be my guess, because it's a little bit early for him. I don't know if he's an immediate NBA impact guy. I mean, he's not necessarily physically developed enough for that. But you're right. One of the dangers of getting the kind of talent that people expect UConn to get is that those are not one and done guys. You know, back in the day when UConn was getting the Ray Allens and the Rudy Gays and people like that, they stayed 2 or 3 years. And the only one and done guy they ever had was Andre Drummond. So, but you are, when you bring in that type of frontline talent, you got to be able to mold a new team every year. But I would expect that, you know, the Booknight and Gaffney and the Cook, if he could get back healthy, will be playing together here at least one more year. That would be my guess.
Before I let you go, only because it made news today after I had already booked you to come on, what do you make? I don't know. Maybe you haven't even seen the comments. David Ortiz calling Mike Fiers a snitch. I know you're a baseball writer. I always love to get your opinions on this. What did you make of David Ortiz at a time where a lot of people are crushing the Astros? It almost seems like Ortiz is taking the side of the Astros by saying, you know, Mike Fiers, why are you snitching people out?
Well, the one thing I would say is this, that I do agree in so much as he got his ring and he got his World Series share, and then 2 years later he blew the whistle. So, you know, like, he's given that stuff back, or if he is, I haven't heard that he is. So there's some element of truth there. But I don't think you can blame the whistleblower. Even it's better late than never. So I don't think you could. I think it's a battle that you're not going to win. You know, the one thing you have to understand is that the old sanctity of the clubhouse rules, you know, what you hear here, what you say here stays here. That doesn't extend or shouldn't extend to covering up wrongdoing. When you see something done that's wrong, you should say something about it. And Mike Fiers did. I just he didn't say it at the time, which is, you know, you could make an argument there that maybe he should have said something in 2017. You know, to give you an example, you know, in 1951, when the Giants were stealing signs, one of their players, Al Worthington, didn't speak out publicly, but he asked to be traded because he didn't want to be part of that. So there is some precedent.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but I would agree with David in so much as, yeah, he probably would have been better if he said something 2 years ago. But it's better late than never.
That's fair. In 30 seconds or less here, there's no way Ortiz isn't a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
I don't think so.
Really?
I'm saying I don't think that.
Oh.
You asked if there was any way. I think what it's going to come down to, you know, what I come down to with him, Jason, is that on his day, when he was honored, the commissioner came to the event and said essentially that the 2003 positive tests were very questionable. I mean, he more or less absolved him at that point. And 13 years more he played, there were never any positive tests. So, you know, I don't know that you could hold that, you could put him in the same category as some of the others. Personally, I would like to see Bonds and Clemens get in before you start putting other guys who are questionable with steroids. But there are certain guys, Ortiz is one, Pettit is another, because HGH was not a banned substance when he took it. Your stories are a little bit different, maybe, than, let's say, a guy who tested positive a bunch of times, like Manny. So I don't know. I think he'll be a first or second ballot Hall of Famer. I think he should be, but you just never know how the vote's going to break.
Dom Amore, Hartford Current. It's always a pleasure. I'm glad we got to do it one more time, my friend.
You got it, Jason. Thank you. Bye bye.
Dom Amore from the Hartford Current.